So we've got our first preference. The second one, now I've taught you all the stuff, should be much easier, and we should get quicker as we go, because you understand the games that we're going to play. So this is to do with, how do you prefer to receive and process your information? Okay? Of all the four descriptors, this is the one that people usually struggle the most with. So it's always good to do it after lunch when you're all suitably tired. So you have to really concentrate hard. And once we crest past this one, we're more than halfway, I promise, because the last two are usually simpler for people to clarify. And you will notice that on the sensing and intuition preference here, that I add a lot of different stuff, which isn't just always about information. It's just simply me adding as many hooks for you to get a handle on which is your right hand, which is your left. So, without further ado, here we go. How would you know if you've got a right hand for sensing as opposed to intuition? If you are a right-handed sensor, the information you love most is information that you can touch, taste, see, hear, smell. Information that is precise, exact, detailed, as concrete as it's possible to be. That is the information that you really enjoy most as a sensor. So wherever you can wrap your senses around it, that's good. If you are a right-handed intuitive, they usually like to take their information in a much more kind of random, ad hoc kind of way. And whereas sensors want to deal with the concrete and the specifics and the details first, the intuitives always want to start with the big picture. They always want to start with the big strategic vision, the general concepts, the possibilities, as it were, of what could be. And whereas the sensors usually like things that are tried and true. The default of the sensor is this. Why do we want to try? Why can't we just learn from the way it's been done in the past? If it's been done that way and we know it works, if it ain't broke, don't try and fix it. Why do people always want to change and innovate things? Particularly when it works reasonably well as it is. Intuitives, on the other hand, are always looking for the new and the untried. And the fact that it's never been done that way before is part of the reason why it's so exciting. Because they're pioneers by character who are always pushing towards the frontier of whatever it is they're involved in. They want to see the new thing. And if it's not been done before, well, they could be... Their default is not, it's not been done before because it didn't work. It's not been done before because maybe no one else has thought about it. So therefore, maybe I am as unique and clever as I hope I am. Sensors love living in the present. Sensors are usually very aware of colour, texture, things that are going on in people's lives around them. Things will change colour or things like that, and they'll notice things like that because a sensor loves living in the now. Because if you think about it, if the information they love is what they can touch, taste, see, hear and smell, where is the most access to that sensory information? Right now. Right here, right now. There is no more sensory moment than this exact second, because at the moment I can touch, I can taste, I can see, I can hear, I can smell. Now, given a choice for a sensor between present is best, but I've got my next choice is either the past or the future, which one is going to be their second choice as a sensor? The past. Past, depending on how you say it. Why? I totally agree with you. Why, Christina? Why is the past better for a sensor than the future?
It's concrete.
It's concrete. It's not quite as real as now, but I can actually trigger sensory memory that reminds me of what it was like to be there. I can read things about what happened. There's a lot of sensory information that I can get from the past. Now, think for a moment. What is the problem about the future if you are a sensor? It doesn't exist. I can't touch it. I can't taste it. I can't see it. I can't hear it. I can't smell it. There is no concrete yet of what's going to happen next week, let alone what's going to happen in 5 years' time. So you see, for the sensor, the horizon is here, and they look very attentive to what's going on here. All of their kind of investigative skills is focused right here now. Now think for an intuitive whose great love of life is the vision and the possibilities of what could be, the new, the untried, the theoretical. Their place they love living towards most is just about as far out into the future as they're allowed to look. Because that's the place where they get to play with their right hand the possibilities of what could be. You know, well, the past is often informative because the past can be a springboard building on the knowledge and wisdom that's already been accumulated so that I can go beyond them into a new thing. But the present, well, what's the kind of, what's part of the problem for the present, for the intuitive? Any thoughts?
They've already gone beyond it.
Yeah. Well, it's here, isn't it? It's not that exciting. Can't really do much else. It's, you know, I can't change it. All I can do is use it as a springboard into the future and change. So who do you think misses detail in the present? Intuitives. Why? Because their brain and their whole way of being for information gathering is, if they have to be stuck in the present, whatever the data they're gathering is only a springboard into the place they'd really like to be. So most intuitives, or pioneers, if you want to cross-fertilize the language, will remember times at college or school where they wrote the most fantastic exam answer to the question they thought they were being asked, rather than the question they were actually being asked. Because what they do is they don't read everything. They read the first information and assume they know what the rest of the question is asking. Sensors are not like that. They read everything. Because they want to make sure their focus is so clear on the concrete and the detail that they know exactly what they're being asked to do. Then they're happy. Isn't that right? And what do they love least is when people keep changing their mind and coming up with new big picture vision and changing the concrete that they're just getting used to. Heaven forbid. So if you think for a moment, who is most likely to love change? The intuitive or the sensor? Why? Because change is a necessary component of moving from the now, which is relatively dull, to the exciting future of what could be. Now, there will be a few scary moments and there may be the odd failure along the way, but it has never robbed the intuitive of that love of the vision of the future, and change is a necessary pain in the process of bringing that vision closer to the present. And when that vision has become present, what happens then? They get a new vision. Because actually, the vision is only as exciting to the point where it becomes reality, and then they want to go and find a new vision, or a new frontier. Yeah? Does it make sense? Now what's the problem for change for a sensor then? Why is it hard for them? It's moving from that which is concrete and known to that which is not. Scary. Yeah. It's moving from the place where they are familiar and where they feel at home, i.e. now, and change always, always involves moving beyond where they're comfortable to places where there isn't concrete yet. Why is it that so many people stay in what appear to be relatively boring jobs, or even dead relationships? The reason is because 70% of the population are sensors. Only 30% are intuitive. It's the only one where there's a complete numerical skew. 70% of people are sensors by right-handed preference. Only 30% are intuitive. So therefore, whenever you are, you know, I'm in a relationship, I'm in a situation, I'm in a working role, it might not be very good. In fact, it might be pretty awful. But at least I know what it's like. And at least it's familiar to me. And the thought of changing my work or my relationship or moving beyond that which is here, I've got a choice. Well, I know this is not that necessarily that nice, but at least I know what it's like and I can live with it. Or I take the risk that I change situation And it might be fantastic, and it might be so much better, but it also might be worse. Yeah? So the thought of it could be worse often locks people into the present. Nowhere is this more apparent than within what I call visionary leadership within the church. Because what is the one commodity, what is the one word that the church almost lives, eats, and breathes and dies for? Begins with V. Vision. You know, there's that wonderful helpful verse, without vision the people perish. You know, there's not a little brackets there or parenthesis which says, with too much vision and no completion everyone dies. Yeah? Do you see? So therefore vision is the thing which is affirmed over and over and again above often the concrete of what's going on. So it's change, you see. Visionaries are always articulating change. That's what they do. And they articulate it often in a language as if they can touch, taste, see, hear and smell it. Because they can. For an intuitive, the future is often as real as the present. And it's as if they can literally touch, taste, see, hear, smell it. And the sensor, listening to them talk, gets drawn into this sense that it must be real because that's what they're talking about. And then they go, whoa, stop, that's not fair. You're using my language, which is concrete language, to describe a reality which doesn't exist. And I nearly fell for it again. Yeah? And it's really hard. Why is it, you see? If you look at the culture that people are growing up in now, the pace of change has never been as fast as it is now. You know, the transition into a whole new cultural norm that has basically served us, the Enlightenment model, for 250 years and has been familiar to many people. We're in a huge social, cultural, spiritual change the whole time. People, even the intuitives, are sometimes wishing the pace of life would simply slow down just a little. Well, if it's slightly stretching for the intuitives, you imagine what it's like for the senses, who are always trying to make things more concrete and more familiar and more real. Everything is changing. Nuclear family, extended family, jobs for life, careers, roles, all these things, change, change, change. Where is the one place that they would really hope that change didn't have to be that quick? Church. 2,000 years of wonderful tradition history. We've been doing this stuff for 2,000 years. The truth is eternal. It was fixed. It was then. Why then do we always have to be changing? Why can't this be one safe place for me from the storm that the rest of my life is? Why is it we have such discussions and fights over, you know, moving the pews for chairs? Or playing three hymns instead of four worship songs, or whatever it might be. What you're dealing with, you see, is the classic tension between the fact the senses, or the settlers, if you'll let me use that language, are basically burnt out of change already before they get anywhere near the church. So in a healthy organism, if you've got the intuitives at one end and the senses at the other, the organisation is usually going forward that way, or the church. The pioneers, because that's what intuitives are, if you like that language, being Americans, and the settlers, this side, they're all going that way and they're all going together. But don't forget, the 70% of people are this lot, and only 30% are this lot. And in any healthy organisation, these are always pulling towards the future. And these are always making sure there is concrete steps of why they're going somewhere. So there's always a healthy creative tension. If there's not, it's usually chaos at this end and death at this end. But what happens is this. Often what happens is the intuitives keep driving towards the future. And once the settlers are not, senses are not quite sure, they often start trying to apply the brakes or even engage reverse. And there's that wonderful, well, terrible moments often in a lot of churches and a lot of organizations where the intuitives are going, if you would only but get what God is calling us to, how can you have so little faith? It's obvious that this is the frontier he's calling us to. And they start to get quite negative towards the, you know, the settlers or the censors. And the censors and the settlers are going, you can go off on another one if you want, but I'm not joining you. You know, I just don't have enough detail yet to really know that this is a safe place to go. And I'm sorry, I'm not coming. In fact, I'm going to be a positive hindrance to this because I just don't want to go there. Or I don't feel confident enough yet that you've given me all of the concrete steps that I need. Because if you draw this one and say, okay, here we go. Here is the vision. Here is the riverbank. Okay. There's little Miss Sensor over there. Here's the river or the sea. There's the sharks. You know, sort of ready to gobble you up. And on the other side of the river is this incredible vision being articulated by the classic intuitive leader. Come to the promised land. It's going to be amazing. I can describe it. You can touch it, taste it, see it, hear it, smell it. Come on, come and join me. Well, the settler, the censor here is going, well, it sounds interesting, but I am not stepping off my safe place that I know exists and is safe for me and my family until you've built me a bridge with stepping stones on it. And if, for example, I really trust you, then I might start walking before I can see the final two steps. But if any of these are missing, there is no way I'm stepping off my safe land. I don't care how exciting the vision is and how excited you get about doing it, I'm not coming. And that is one of the most, for leaders, particularly in the church, to understand that 70% at least, and if you're in established traditional denominations, it'll probably be higher, most of them are saying, where is the concrete? How do I know it's safe to come? It's not they don't love vision, and this is one of the things I need to affirm. And for censors and settlers, you know, they often feel, I'm only a settler or a censor. You have such a vital part to play, because if they often love visioning things. But often in that brainstorm environment, they're the ones who go, do you know, that is so brilliant. Stop. No one say another word. Let's get that down. How are we going to make that become reality? That's so good. I know what you lot are like. If I let you go off thinking of more ideas, by the time we've done another hour, you'll have forgotten all about that one, and we'll be on to another one over here. Let's look at how we can make that become reality. And once we've done that, maybe we can look at another one. So if you're going to lead change in any organization, this is probably the most helpful analogy you can ever want to have. And that's why as well, you need to be closely in contact with your senses, because they can save you so much pain. I often say to people, look for your key settlers or senses. I'm interchanging the two now. Because there'll be people who really love you and love the vision that you're articulating, and so want to come with you. They're totally for you, but they're the people who actually will help you know whether you've put enough steps in the water already. And rather than getting frustrated at them and going, oh, I can't believe you're still asking those nasty questions, let them, as it were, be the ones who help. Whenever you're going to do a presentation about a vision, let a settler have a look at it first and say, if I presented this to you, would that be enough to make you want to come with me? And the chances are they'll go, no. And your default reaction is to go, oh, I can't believe you're so negative again. As opposed to seeing them as a gift and saying, okay then, I might have missed. Where's the step that I've missed that will allow you to come with me? Because one of the things I observe is this. However much an intuitive tries to put steps in the water, senses intuitively know that they're not one of them. But where you get a settler themselves trying to describe the vision and why they're going for it, all of a sudden, all of the settlers go, oh, okay then. And sometimes I observe it with almost amazement, because as a mode of communication, as a performance, as an articulation, you know, visionaries, once they get going, they're just wonderful. And sometimes somebody can stand at the front or talk to a group in the most faltering way with the most awful PowerPoint presentations and often sort of stumble over their words as they articulate how they understand the vision and their role within it. And everyone in the room goes, well, that's great then. Because they've heard it through someone that they know is actually one of them. It's very interesting to watch that happen. And if intuitives would but recognize the gift that the senses are, they would actually see a lot more of the vision come to fruition. But it's often embracing the pain of that process that helps them get there. Let me give you a couple more. Sensors tend to be quite pragmatic people. They like things to be predictable. And if you give them a problem, their default is to assume that the answer will lie somewhere in how people have done it in the past. They like to be practical people. They don't have to be good at making things, but sensors, if you think about it, they often love actually making things and doing things with their hands and, you know, being engaged, as it were, in that physical world around them, because it's that which stimulates their senses. They're often very aware of nature and beauty around them, and, you know, this part of the world's great for all the sunsets, and it's kind of, they love those sensory pursuits often, so photography, things which allow them to really see the detail that is there in the beauty of creation. That's often the things that brings them huge life. Their great cry is, tell me what is. Okay? If the intuitive mantra is this, tell me what could be. The sensor is always saying, okay, what could be is exciting, but I'd rather start with what is. Give me the detail, give me the specifics, give me the concrete data that allows us to know whether what could be is even possible. They like people to be realistic, and they like realism, and they like things that are definite and measurable. Last one for intuitives. They love to be inventive, they love to be creative, they love to use their imagination. And they're often quite comfortable with theoretical systems and models. Things don't actually have to exist in reality for them to believe in them. In fact, sometimes it's much more exciting to create intellectual possibilities of what could be than actually to do the hard work of actually making them become reality. And the thing which usually clinches it is this. Most intuitives will actually make huge, sometimes big, life-changing decisions based on what they describe as a gut feeling or a sixth sense. And they kind of go, you'll hear them say, I'm not quite sure exactly why I'm going to do this, but I've just got a feeling that actually if we go this way, it'll work. And all the sensors, big blue lights, hang on, reverse. The Lord has given us 5 fantastic senses to be able to evaluate information before we make decisions. We want to be able to touch it, taste it, see it, hear it, smell it. And you want to make a decision that's going to affect a whole business, your marriage, where you're going to live, career, on what? A gut feeling. Yeah? But the thing is, the intuitives often become very good at using that sixth sense. And that's why there are a huge overrepresentation of intuitives in senior leadership roles. Because if you think within the corporate world, what is it that people are looking for? They're looking for people who can see ahead, even in churches, I guess, to see ahead of what could be and to plot an intersection with something which doesn't yet exist yet. So to have an idea or a product or something which allows you to create something which others haven't seen the need for yet, so that when the market catches up, you're right there at the center of it with your offering. There's no point starting the process once everyone's aware that it's needed. Do you see that? So therefore, whenever you're dealing with leadership, you're always invariably dealing with an overrepresentation of intuitives. And a lot of what I'm trying to do here is help intuitives understand why they sometimes struggle to lead change, but also to have compassion on those who find change more difficult, and to begin to recognize it's not that they're just out to spoil your fun or make life difficult for you. Actually, they're part of the gift to the body, be it the organization or the church. And, you know, if you would but learn to use that gift, you can become much more effective in what you do. A few things to play with. Okay, I'm going to give you 30 seconds to have a look at the picture. Great. So normally I'd say now, tell me about the picture. So who should I choose? Sue, come on, tell me about the picture.
Okay,
Yeah. Great. Okay. Chris, tell me about the picture.
She's dreaming. She's thinking about something. She's looking in the water. Looks like rabbits coming. Something's going to happen.
Christina, tell me about the picture.
Lots of flowers, birds, town in the background. Alice looking at her reflection in the water. Cat sitting next to her.
Anyone notice any kind of differences in the way people respond to these things? Because what happens is this. Sensors, that was what they call a sensory-rich picture. But just a little bit of possibilities for what could be. Okay? Because sensors see detail. So what they do is, it's almost like they take a photograph of the picture. And therefore, they're then accessing concrete. So they always describe things that are real in it. No, I didn't tell you, give me a list of all the things you could see. I said, tell me about it. So, for example, when Chris started, how did you start? She's obviously dreaming. Okay? Well, there's no word up there which says Alice is dreaming. Because what intuitives do is this. Whereas senses, okay, always communicate and learn and like to learn in sequential steps. The intuitive is always, always looking to use any amount of sensory information as a springboard into possibilities of what could be. So, Sue was doing something of the same. What often happens is people give me a few concrete details. There's nothing there which says it's Alice in Wonderland. Your intuitive type capacity has made that connection. I mean, I've done it with people who said it's obviously spring, there's 7 crocuses that are out in the bottom right, there's 8 birds flying northwest, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, is there? And you look at it and go, oh, you're absolutely right. Because that's what the senses do. The intuitives, like Chris, I suspect, is immediately assuming that there is connection and meaning behind the data. So therefore, you often hear them saying, oh, it reminds me of, or it makes me feel like, or it looks a little like. So they're always making associations beyond what is concrete. And once you know that that's what your brain does, you begin to understand why you sometimes miss the details, Chris. Because you're already off floating into possibilities of what could be without necessarily gathering all the factual data that goes in. Once you know that's what your right hand does, you can give yourself a little bit more grace. And recognize that you're using your other hand, it'll take a bit longer. It's the same in communication here. Sensors love to learn in that wonderfully ordered, you know, give me all the steps. Don't try and shortcut me. Don't try and build, you know, don't try and give me 2 bits of knowledge and assume I'm going to jump to step 7. I want to learn and I want to be taught in a way which allows me to build on each learning block of knowledge. For those any of you who educate, you see this is quite useful. Because 70% of the kids in the class will be sensors. However, there will be 30% of the annoying little monkeys who, given the chance to move from step 1 to step 5 and give you an answer because they've seen a cunning way through the puzzle, will simply want to give you the end answer. Those of you who are sensors by nature, when it came to mathematics at school, will have been the ones who wanted to show all your workings. Because there's the concrete, there's the specifics, that's how I know I'm making progress. A lot of the intuitives will often, if they can jump from 1 to 5 and just give you the answer, they think it's so clever. And they're ingenious, and they've demonstrated their kind of capacity to see puzzle-solving problems. That's what they love doing. Yeah, does that make sense? Also happens in communication. So if you are someone who every now and again people say, hang on, reverse. I have no idea how you got to where you are now, but 2 minutes ago you were talking about this and now you're talking about that and I've lost you completely. That usually means that you're dealing with an intuitive, because the intuitive brain doesn't like or doesn't need to keep going in step-by-step communication. Because as they start talking, even what they're talking about in the present, their brain is already looking for possibilities and connections in the future. So they'll talk about something and it will remind them of something else, which will then remind them of something else, and before they know it, they're way away from what they originally started talking about. Isn't that true? Any of you recognise some of those things? And for the senses, it's like, it's really frustrating. Why can't you just talk properly? Why can't you just kind of stay on one thing at a time? Why can't you even finish a sentence without changing your mind? Yeah. Because you're not giving me enough concrete for me to really be able to follow where you're going. But I'd like to. Can you help me? Particularly the introvert intuitives who only ever... the extrovert intuitives. Remember that idea of needing to think out loud in order to understand what you're saying? Well, where you have extrovert intuitives, they usually need to be talking about things and lots of things, and there's lots of connections going on. But to people from the outside looking in, who don't get to see all the workings and connections, it's like trying to follow a maze. Come back to me when you've got something more concrete, because this isn't, you know, that's often what people will say. Here's a little game for you. No right or wrong answers. What do you see? Nate, what's the first thing you see?
Three shapes.
Okay. Michelle?
No, since you said that, now I just see the missing shape.
Ah, very good. Different reaction. Who else we got here? Andrea, what do you see? Or what did you see now? Because they've all started ruining it.
They're orange and they're set in a triangle shape.
Yeah, okay. So, that sort of thing. What happens is this, and don't forget, you've got two hands, so you do both, is where you go first. A lot of the senses, when you give them that, say, well, there's a red triangle, red square, red, well, maybe not a circle, slightly squashed, maybe a red ellipse on a white background, why do you ask? Because what they do first is they go for the detail that is there. The intuitive's brain, the detail that's there is suddenly less interesting because it's already there. So what's the connection? What's the purpose of this factual information? So therefore they often say, well, I can see a big triangle or there's a piece missing. Because their brain is going, what's the connection behind this? Because there must be more than what I can see. Yeah? Does that make sense? Whereas the senses will do that if I push them, but often their default is to try and make sure, I want to know I've got all the detail first before I then try and extrapolate from that possibilities of what could be or what's different. It's fascinating, isn't it, all this stuff, when you begin to realise how our brains are wired differently, let alone when they combine with the rest of the letters. So there is me giving you a very, very detailed run-through of the difference in a right-handed sensor and a right-handed intuitive. How many people at this stage think that they are right-handed, i.e. that's their preference, for intuition? For intuition. That's your preferred way of gathering and processing information. I will guarantee that's what you are. And how many of you are right-handed sensors? Cool. And how many of you are completely uncertain at the moment? Okay, now think for a moment, in terms of the ought and should, which do you think is more highly valued in terms of, which is the one that is validated more often within the worlds in which you live? So American, entrepreneur, pioneer culture, church, vision-based, possibilities for the future, which is the one that is the one that is most naturally affirmed? The intuitive. It's not the same in all cultures, by the way. You know, you go to England, I think senses are probably affirmed over intuitives. But true American culture, I think, is an extrovert intuitive culture. Go to Scandinavia, introvert intuitive. Very interesting. So, therefore, Sarah, if you are unsure, which are you most likely to be? A sensor. Because that's the one where you've been constantly trying to use your other hand in order to feel like you're belong. Most intuitives, when I describe that, they know they're intuitives and they feel really proud about it, and their hands go up nice and straight because they think, thank God I'm not a sensor. You know, there's a lot of superiority complex built into intuition because they're affirmed and they're valued for it. And I spend a lot of my time trying to make senses and settlers realize they are such a precious gift. They really are. Pioneers, okay? If I'm a true type pioneer, which I am, so, you know, I'm always looking for that new frontier. I mean, this is boring. I want to keep moving. So I'm going. I'm settling it. I'm fighting the bears. I'm kind of, you know, anything to get to the new frontier. And when I get there, and I kind of just about make it habitable and maybe put up a shack or, you know, just clear enough so we're not going to get attacked every night. The moment I've been there for a month or two, it's like, wow, there must be another frontier out there. And if the intuitives, the pioneers, just keep going and never bring the rest of the people with them, in the end, they lose all the ground they've taken. It's the same in the kingdom. If you think of the idea that what we're doing is we usually have territory that we have, the church, you know, has territory that it's taken, and the people within it are usually then within that covenant protection. When God leads a church out into a pioneer season, it's about expanding the territory, taking ground, and then for you usually then get to settle the land that God has given you. If you don't take the census and the settlers with you, you'll never settle it. You'll lose it very, very quickly. You know, because they're the ones that want to go, well, it's all right, but I wouldn't really want to live here. I mean, how about some running water for starters? What about some central heating? What about some aircon? I tell you what, we could build a fantastic school and hospital here. What about some sewage treatment works? What about some electricity? What about some entertainment and parks for the kids? You know, the pioneers are never usually into that stuff. I mean, it's like, but you imagine what our culture, our life would be like if it wasn't for the fact that the settlers have chosen to help us build fantastic things on top of the areas of lands that the pioneers took. You know, everything would be one floor high and prefab, wouldn't it, without settlers? Because they love what it looks like. It needs to feel nice. It needs to be to actually reflect something of the beauty of the world around them that actually is their expression of worship often. Do you see how we can... But you've got to affirm and you've got to make them feel that actually they're not come out second-class citizens, because that's usually how they feel, isn't it, Christina?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the real value is when the intuitive empowers the sensory to get the job done.
Absolutely.
Because the vision comes here, but in order for that vision to play out, the sensories have to feel empowered.
Totally.
Have an action plan.
If you have a team, you usually need different gifts. And learning how those gifts can be utilized, okay? It's not that we can't do both. If I really asked you to pioneer something, you'd have a pretty good go at it. It would just take a lot of energy from you. And if you ask someone who's a true nutty pioneer, I want you to settle this piece of land and do it well, they will. It's not we can't do it. We've got two hands. And sometimes, you see, and I'll come back to this again and again, Myers-Briggs and is not an excuse for saying, oh, I don't do that. And in the spiritual life, when we look at fivefold ministry, as I hope you do at some stage of the Pentagon, you know, we have base ministry that God gives us because we're really good at it and it brings us real life. But as we go through the life that we live, part of the intention is to make us more like Christ. Cause us to grow as people. Cause us, that one of faith, to grow into the fullness of what it means to be all we can be in Christ. Well, Jesus was perfect at all these things, wasn't he? You know, he was totally ambidextrous. So therefore, if you journey in faith and in maturity over years, it does sometimes get harder to recognize the handedness. You know, however annoying it might be sometimes. Because actually what it is it's just showing you're growing all the time. And the Lord has taken you into seasons of life where often it's just really hard. Most of us grow more in the times when we don't do so well. We grow more often in the times of failure and the times where we actually have to recognize the limitations of our own resources. So if I take a settler and ask them to pioneer things, they usually be much more dependent upon God for that process. Because they don't really believe they've got the resource to do it. If I take an intuitive pioneer and ask them to settle something, they usually know that they need God's help and others around them to help them do it. Do you see that kind of... And we end up the Joseph syndrome, you know, which is the world spins around me and aren't I wonderful. Most of us learn more about actually... You know, the growth that comes when we're actually dealing with the things we're not so good at. So it's not that we can't do one or the other, it's just one comes more naturally to us. And it's how we harness those gifts that make a difference. Is that good? I'm going to plow on because I want to get the next one done before we finish for the next break. Okay? So the next one is, does anyone need a quick toilet stop? I know people had water at lunchtime. Do you want to have 5 minutes or do you want to last? Great, we're off. We're running too late. You missed it. So we've got our energy source. We've got our preferred way of gathering and processing information. So you should have two letters by now, either an IS, IN, or an ESEN.